matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match. Find me a fine catch.
Hi, I'm Catherine Debs. Does dating drive you crazy? Would you like to know one topic that all men love to talk about? Would you like to know the subject you should never, ever talk about on a first date? How would you like to marry a fabulous man? Well, you've come to the right place because Perry Livermore is here with us today, and she's ready to spill the beans on how to find that fabulous man. Perry?
Thanks, Catherine. If you've ever wondered how to win over a fantastic man, listen up. I've had years of experience as a matchmaker. Every day, men tell me exactly what a smart woman does to win them over. And you know, the men say the same things over and over again. So if you're tired of the dating scene, my book, How to Marry a Fabulous Man, will let you in on the secrets to getting down that aisle. Today, we're going to be talking about matchmaking services and dating websites. And joining us in the studio is Andrew Conru. He's the founder and CEO of FriendFinder.com.
Yeah, I started the first online dating site in 1993, back when almost nobody was on the online. It was like, what the heck is this stuff? Well, I was doing my PhD at Stanford, and nothing else to do as a PhD student, so what are you going to do? Look for other people. And what's
Were you looking for a girlfriend at the time?
Well, I just got out of a relationship, and it was a good time for me to start looking. I looked at what opportunities do you have. Back before the internet, it was like you had some offline dating services and that, but they just, I saw the new technologies here. You can find someone anywhere in the world, and it's so romantic to say, cast your net as far as possible and find the perfect woman no matter where she's at.
Well, that's terrific. And you actually have 25 different sites, so you have a lot of authority, as far as I'm concerned, as to what would make a great profile. If someone is going to develop a profile about themselves, what would you suggest would be the necessary steps, Andrew?
When it comes to a profile for women, the key part is that you have to be very quick when it comes to showing that you have some compatibilities with the guys reading your profile. A lot of times people will write a really long, detailed profile thinking that that's going to give a lot of background about who they are, but they tend to be less successful because a guy will see that and go, oh my gosh, I have to read, you know, a whole book about this person. And I want to get, like, just at the very beginning, I want something catchy, something that would show that that guy has some compatibilities with the woman that they're looking at.
So is humor important?
Oh, humor is phenomenally important. Well, humor is so important in any type of relationship. And so if you can show that you have some, you're going to be able to go to the top of the list.
Oh, that's great. That's great. What about romance? Do you think that women especially look for guys that say, oh, I like to walk on the beach and have dinner by candlelight? I mean, is this something that is popular with women or no?
Well, I think everyone wants romance in a relationship. But it's how do you identify which person is romantic and which person is sensitive and which person is understands himself well enough to be in a good relationship? And those things are always tricky, so it all depends on the person's needs.
So I wrote to the paper, took out a personal ad, and though I'm nobody's poet.
So Andrew, what is the key to writing a profile that really stands out?
You want to make sure that when you write a profile, you have things in there that other people are going to identify with. For example, if you like doing scrapbooking, a lot of women enjoy scrapbooking, but it might not be as popular for the people they're trying to attract.
Right.
And so it's key to put things in the profile that a guy is going to be able to respond to and be able to say, ah, I like a woman who also likes that.
So should a woman say, I like to smoke cigars and watch football on television and sit around with the boys and drink beer? I mean,
can see yourself doing that, there's you can say you like sports or like, you know, maybe the reason why you like sports is it gets them out of the house, but it's the same thing. It's you have to find something that the guy says, aha, this woman is somehow compatible. Of course, you have your own things you enjoy, but you don't have to bring that out at the very beginning.
Well, Andrew, how important is it to pick the right profile photograph?
Not only is the profile important, but the photo is even more important because we talked about earlier. Guys have so little time to read a profile that they almost need cue cards of what who you are. And those cue cards are almost always the photos. So the guy, he will like flip through your photos really quick to try to see what is the background of this person. So if you have illustrative photos that kind of abstract what your profile is all about. Like if you like golf, you know, there's a picture of you, you know, on the golf course. Because guys are very visual and it's very the fastest way to get the point across. So the guys go, oh, they flip the photos, it looks interesting. Then they're going to start reading your profile.
Hmm.
So it's very important that they complement each other.
Is it really important to put accurate photos on, or can you have one that maybe was 5 years old when you were a few pounds lighter?
Well, one of the things that I always suggest is try to put something that is obviously flattering but also real. one of the key parts of online dating is that very soon after you meet someone, you want to get offline. You actually want to meet them face to face. And there's already going to be a little bit of a disconnect between what your perception is somebody online versus what you see when you first see them in real life.
Mm-hmm.
That not only are you going to have the issue that you have to relearn the person, but at the same time, you're going to have to make sure that you live up to the expectations of what you look like. The last thing you want to do is age 5 years simply by showing up at the coffee shop.
Or 10 pounds fatter.
Yeah, you never know.
I have a really cute story of this one guy. It was kind of a sad but funny story. He's in his mid-30s and he's CEO of a Silicon Valley company. And he said, Perry, it was really awful the other night. And I said, why? And he said, well, you know, I really wanted to meet this woman. I'd been emailing her. I met her online and she just sounded so fantastic. And everything that I liked, she liked. And she was just gorgeous. And I kept saying, when are we going to meet? When are we going to meet? And she kept saying, oh, let's get to know each other a little bit. And he said, I went to the door and I had champagne and flowers because at this time we'd known each other about a month.
Oh, my
yes.
gosh. Moving
he was
fast.
Crazy about her, right? So he had champagne and flowers. He was so excited to meet her because he thought, this is the woman for me.
This is it.
And she opened the door and he said, is your daughter home?
Oh, no.
And it was actually her. So I think a lot of women put up pictures of themselves that aren't really accurate.
Andrew, is there such a thing as putting up a picture that's too good or too sexy or too?
I've kind of come to the conclusion that, you know, after a couple of dates, they realize that if they put a photo that's too flattering or too long ago, they're going to have to worry about an uphill battle anyway. So it's
yes.
a lot better to say, this is what I look like. Now, the key part, obviously, is to smile, have good lighting, things that, that kind of get the best of who you are, but not necessarily fudging it a bit.
Would you say you should go to a professional photographer?
Well, you have to be a little careful on that. If he makes it too professional, then the guy's red flags are going to come up and say, oh, this woman
looks
a little too good.
Couldn't be that perfect.
Especially if your photo has, like, glamour shots or something on it right there, then you know that there's some trouble going on.
Well, what about the red flags? Like, let's say a woman is reading a lot of different profiles from all these. She's got all these great emails from these guys. What should really give her cause for concern?
Every person has to keep their radar up at all times. And they use your gut instinct and, you know, some of the intuition parts that have got you where you're at today. But there's just some warning signs. A lot of times, if the person's overly bitter or they talk about their ex-relationships on their profile or they're condescending or they say things like, I can't believe I'm doing this. You know, they always kind of set it up that there's something else going on that the person has a little red flags to be worried about. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're all bad. It just means that you have to be prepared and address those things as you get closer.
What is the best advice that you can give to a woman? How long should she email a guy and get to know a guy before she actually meets him? Go offline, as you
offline.
Call it.
Well, there's, like I said, one of the neat things about online dating is you can also pace yourself, depending on how comfortable you are with the person. If the person comes across and they seem pretty straightforward, they communicate well, they're self-reflected in their profiles and that, then you can move a little bit more quicker. Now, if you have little red flags, then you might want to send maybe 3 or 4 emails before you meet somebody. But I think that you should get offline fairly quickly in the relationship because you then don't have too much time to form preconceived notions of what the person is simply by the way they email or what they say in their profile. Now, one of the key parts here is that when you do go offline, perhaps after a couple emails or so, it's how to stage that, where to go, what types of things you should do. And there's a lot of things you could do to make the first meeting be more successful.
Like what are some of those things?
Well, the first one is always make the first meeting be someplace where you have a quick out. So, for example, instead of meeting for drinks where you, then you have to find a good excuse how to get out, meet for lunch or meet just for coffee. Always have something back at the office or back at the company you have to do in case the date's not going well.
You should probably tell someone where you're going, too, just in case.
Of course. If you meet at a very public place and you drive by yourself and you'd use your best judgment on how to go on it, don't be too afraid.
Right.
It's very rare that issues happen from people that you meet online. In fact, there's almost no evidence that shows that you're any more danger if you date somebody online versus somebody you met offline.
Oh.
But you have to always use common sense, like you mentioned.
Sure. People worry a lot about privacy, Andrew. How do we know what online dating sites are doing with our personal data?
Almost every online dating site is pretty good at keeping their members' data private.
Good.
The only real concern you might have is what other members are doing trying to get your personal information. For example, a very common technique that bad people use is they'll ask for your email address in the first couple emails that you send. Be very cautious of giving somebody your direct email address and also be cautious of emailing them outside of the site itself.
Why is that?
Well, Well, because once someone has your email address, you never really know what they're going to do with it. You don't know if they're going to then sell that to a third party to send you bad emails, or they're going to send you threatening emails. If the relationship goes bad, are they going to use that in a bad way?
Well, I know that some women I've talked to, they have special emails just for the situation you're talking about.
Sure, sure.
Is that a good idea?
It's a great idea. If you really want to start giving out your email address, go ahead and open up one of these generic free email service sites like a Gmail or Hotmail or Yahoo. That way you can separate your personal life and your online dating life. Privacy is important, obviously.
Well, thank you so much. You really gave us a lot of very useful information.
It was great to meet you, Andrew.
Yeah,
I look
pleasure.
Forward to going to your sites. And now a word from the American Heart Association.
Your life is fast-paced. You take care of your children, your career, and your home. Well, now it's time to take care of yourself. That's what the American Heart Association's Go Red for Women campaign is all about. Did you know heart disease is the number one killer of women? And that means it is not someone else's problem. For women, it's their problem, and that's where the Go Red Heart Checkup comes in. So love your heart. Take the Go Red Heart Checkup at goredforwomen.org to find out your personal risk for heart disease and stroke. After all, if you don't take care of yourself, who will? So take the Go Red Heart Checkup. Your life could depend on it. Call 1-888-MY-HEART or visit goredforwomen.org.
Catherine, we are so lucky today. We're going to be talking about matchmaking services. And we have Amber Kelleher Andrews, and she is from the largest privately owned matchmaking service in the country.
I want a man. Find me one. Find me one.
Amber, tell us a little bit about Kelleher & Associates.
Well, Kelleher & Associates is an upscale matchmaking firm. We're known as an executive search firm. We have multiple offices across the country, so we can work with you in either a local, regional area or on a nationwide search. And we are a privately owned company, so we still maintain the boutique-like personable service, which we're very well known for, and we are the leader in our field.
Can you tell us a little bit about what advantage does one have by retaining a matchmaking service as opposed to, let's say, having your friends fix you up?
Well, having your friends fix you up can actually be really great so long as they know both of you well enough. But 9 times out of 10, when you meet someone through a friend, you're sitting across the table from a really nice person, but they don't meet your criteria. And what's so great about going to a matchmaker is you're in charge. You're putting the power back in your hands, and you can actually write down your criteria and then ask the matchmaker to find this person.
If somebody wanted to find a really good matchmaker, could they Google them?
That's a great way to do it. You need to choose the keywords that fit who you are and what you're looking for. If you want to go to a dating service, go onto Google and mark dating services. If you want to work with an upscale matchmaking firm such as ours, you would put in upscale matchmaking.
If you say, all right, I'm going to go to a matchmaker, what questions should you be prepared to answer?
I think you need to know what you're bringing to the table, and you need to be realistic with what you're asking for. And that's the homework that you need to do with, you know, your criteria. The questions that you need to ask the matchmaker is, well, first, find out how long they've been in business. I would definitely check to make sure that they are a member of the Better Business Bureau. And that's only half of it. What, you know, do they have a satisfied record with the Better Business Bureau? But you want to be able to ask the matchmaker questions and kind of get a feel for if their answers are oh, no problem, that's I'll be able to do that, no problem, or if their answers are related specifically to your question. So if you say, do you have men in the field of medicine between the age of 35 and 40 that are still looking to have children? If their answer is, oh, yeah, that's no problem, I would recommend going to another company. But if the answer to you is, I do have a few men in the medical field between that age, but is that all that you want me to look for, or would you also be open to meeting somebody that is an attorney or somebody that is a CEO of a company? Right there, you know the matchmaker is thinking not only to supply you with what your first criteria is, but they want to be able to make this work for you.
Now, what would you expect to pay, let's say, on average for a matchmaker?
Well, again, this is what makes our firm interesting. We have local staffs and offices in multiple cities. So you can either join still locally, believe it or not, for as low as $6,500, which is the price of a dating service.
Amber, how do you find the men and women that end up in your database?
We have a number of ways. We certainly do a lot of networking. Because we're fortunate enough to have multiple offices across the country, they're working within their own community on a local level to keep the the database going. But you'll find us in the airlines. We've been on 2020. We've been featured on the Donny Deutsch and lots of wonderful press. And it's a lot of word of mouth when you've been around this long and somebody says, "Do you know about a matchmaking company?" Chances are they'll know about us.
Amber, I understand that you're doing something for charity.
My mother, Jill Kelleher, and I are happy to announce that anybody that's listening to this radio show today and retains our services because of this, we would be happy to donate 20% of their membership fee directly to the children's charity that we're currently working with.
Well, thank you for your generosity, and thanks for being here, Amber.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Alan. He has cancer.
My wife didn't need to say a thing. I could see the fear on her face. I had just been diagnosed with cancer, but all I could think about was her.
This is Sarah, Alan's wife.
After 46 years together, I wasn't about to let him face this alone. I wanted to help, but I wasn't sure what to do. We both had a lot of questions.
The American Cancer Society helped them find the answers by calling 1-800-ACS-2345. Alan and Sarah got the help they needed to face cancer the same way they face every challenge in life, together.
No one has to fight cancer alone. No one. If I have a question, I just call. They're always there for me.
For answers, information, and support, call 1-800-ACS-2345 or visit www.cancer.org anytime, day or night. This is the American Cancer Society. This is who to call for help.
We're back in the studio with Perry Livermore, author of How to Marry a Fabulous Man. Perry, we've talked about traditional dating services and online dating services. Can you think of any other ways to meet people?
I certainly can, Catherine. One of the biggest, most wonderful things you can do for yourself and one of the biggest secrets I can convey is to become your own matchmaker. Matchmake your friends. Amazing things will happen to you. Everyone will love you. They won't be able to resist someone who wants to help them. And it also gives you such a fantastic feeling inside to be able to help someone else.
How did you get into matchmaking, Perry, and why do you do it?
I make matches, Catherine, because it may have something to do with when I was a small girl. I didn't have very many friends. My grandmother was a Shakespearean actress, and I spent every Sunday with her, and she would talk to me about Shakespearean soliloquies and poetry and things like that. I really didn't have any friends because my classmates thought I was sort of this kid to ridicule.
Can you imagine reciting soliloquies when you're five?
Yes, I would ask little kids.
In the playground? On
exactly.
The playground?
I would say, well, now what's your favorite Shakespearean sonnet? And they would look at me with their eyes glazed over. So I decided that later on that I would go to, I guess I'd gotten to be maybe 15, I would go to my cousin's high school, which was across town, and go to a dance there. In fact, my mom bought me a new little outfit and I put on lipstick for the first time. And I walked into this sock hop. Remember sock hops?
Oh, yeah.
Walked into a sock hop. And I had suddenly gotten, you know, to be more of a girl.
Voluptuous.
More of a girl. And so what happened is that I started dancing with this fellow. And I looked, and there were about five or six guys all standing in line to dance with me.
I love it.
Well, it was such a scary thing to me because I thought, oh, my God, at my high school, this doesn't happen at all. I mean, the kids kind of make fun of me. So I thought, this is terrific. So what I did was I decided to fix up my friends from my high school.
With the ones that you didn't want out of the line of men.
Well, yes, I thought, well, gee, this is what happens at this high school. We all have to come over here. Because they didn't, as I say, they didn't know me as the kid that was kind of strange and did a lot of quirky things. So what happened was that moment sort of changed my life. And I reinvented myself. And I decided, well, what I should do is I should fix people up. So when we'd have games like football games, baseball games, I would always go to the other side and sit with the other people. And I'd get to know them, you know, because I got to be friendly. And I'd get to know them and I'd say, you know, there's this guy that I know at my high school. You should meet him. And what happened was I went from being sort of this kid that nobody liked to when I graduated from high school, I was dating like the president of student council, captain of the basketball teams, and particularly at some of these schools. And I mean,
from
I
geek
was like,
to star.
Well, I don't think I was a star, but I really was in the mainstream. I was part of what was going on.
You were connecting these two high schools. They'd never been connected before.
And it wasn't just these two. It was five, six, seven high schools, whatever high school I could find. And so I was shipping people everywhere. But then when I got, you know, I got a little older, I decided, well, gee, I've got to keep this going, because it was like one of Pavlov's dogs. You know, the bell would ring, you'd get a goodie. So I'd say, oh, my goodness, I got to keep going with this. So I just have always liked to fix people up.
So you started as a young girl.
I did, and I was so romantic. I was such a romantic little girl, and I used to really be excited about getting married. Somehow that whole subject just fascinated me. And all my dolls got married many, many times each summer. In fact, my sister would always be so mad because she didn't like dolls. She had Smokey the Bear, and he would always have to be the groom, and it used to just really aggravate her. But we used to go behind the hydrangea bushes, and I discovered that each hydrangea blossom made a perfect wedding bouquet.
Perry, while you were making mock marriages in the hydrangea bush, I was inside playing dress-up, trying to figure out what I was going to wear to the ceremony. So, Perry, what happens if somebody gets mad at you for fixing them up because it didn't go right?
Well, if someone gets angry with you, you just have to remember you always have to be fair, and you will have done the work prior to asking them questions about what they want. And if you've guessed wrong and they get angry with you, you can't let them bother you. And you can't let it bother you that maybe they don't like the person that you thought was so terrific for them. So you have to just be very positive about it and say, well, now, John, what can I do to make this up to you? I'd like to fix you up with someone that you like even better. So what kind of person would you like, and what was wrong with this match? I know there's nothing wrong with her, but what was wrong with the match? And then you make a correction, and you say, well, gee, John, I'm going to get it better next time. You would be surprised how most people will go again.
Right.
Most people will say, well, here's someone who's very interested in me, and that is the secret. If you become interested in someone and they think that you really want to help them, they just can't resist you. And I will tell you, there are some certain things you can do, too, is you don't want to be judgmental. If someone says, well, Perry, I only like women who have very, very athletic builds, and I can't bear a woman who has more than an ounce of fat on her. Or I've had some guys say to me, hey, nothing less than 34C, please. But you cannot be judgmental. You can't say, well, what's wrong with him that he doesn't like blondes instead of brunettes?
I guess that's kind of a taboo subject for men, isn't it, to say something about size of breast.
You know, I invite them to say these things because it's sort of like going to your psychologist, Catherine, because people will tell you all their secrets, which you must not repeat, but people will tell you things because they know if you're going to help them that you have to know this information.
Right.
And men are particularly very visual, and they don't want to be with a woman who doesn't appeal to them. And in fact, I often feel sorry for women because they meet some great guy and they say, oh, we had the best conversation, but he didn't call me. What was wrong? And they met at a party or something. But what they don't realize is this particular man has an idea of what he's looking for, and it's such a strong idea that he can't be with other types of women that don't fall within these parameters.
And that doesn't mean you're
nothing
a bad
wrong with
date
you.
Or not pretty?
No, it's just, and you know, you can't judge him because he feels that way, because I liken it to when maybe the first woman you fell in love with was of a different race. So the first woman you fall in love with was had blonde pigtails or something
like that. Or the unapproachable woman that you always wanted to date and never could was.
Right, and so that's what you end up liking, and you cannot help that. Women can't help it. Men can't help it. So you never say, well, why do you want that kind of person? Why don't you choose another kind of person? Because usually people have a very, particularly male people,
mm-hmm.
they have
I
a pretty good
like
idea.
I only like brunettes.
Yes.
I only like blondes.
It happens a lot.
I've heard it many times.
It happens a lot. And another big important thing when you want to fix people up is you want to have as large a pool as possible. So you're going to be doing a lot of networking. It's always good to have extra business cards in your pocket. And you can – now, here's another big tip. Let's say you meet this guy that you are just so thrilled by and you just can't bear it. He's so cool. But he's talking to you and he doesn't respond to you the way that a man responds to a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So what you say to him is, you know, I think you're just wonderful. And I have a girlfriend I think you'd really like. And it's always good to have – some wonderful girlfriends.
Right, and then you have a common thing to talk about.
Yes.
And who knows, he might come full circle and say, you know what, I really like you.
And that has happened to me quite a few times.
I bet.
When I was single, it happened a lot. Because what happened was they get to know you a little better. One of the things that's so gratifying is when you see a really great guy, he should go out with one of your friends instead of one of somebody else's friends. Why let him get away for your friends? Your friends
exactly.
should have the opportunity
Keep
to meet
him. Keep
him
in the loop.
That's exactly right. But the most wonderful thing about this is if you fix up your friends, Catherine, you will have a much richer life. I know the only reason why I have my television show or this show, the only reason why I even wrote the book or have such a fabulous husband myself is because I reached out. I did things for other people. It is in giving that we receive. That's what St. Francis of Assisi said, and that is true. If you give to others, no matter which way it is, it really makes such a difference in your life is made so much richer for it. And that is really such a secret I can give to people and such a blessing I can give to people. I will guarantee you, if you start fixing up your friends, you will have a wonderful social life. You will never sit home on Saturday night. So it's a beautiful thing that happens when you want to help other people. And as far as remember when I really started giving to charity, I was doing this because I wanted to have something for my friends to do. But I remember I said to my husband, well, gee, you know, what I'd really like to do is just go into the straight matchmaking. And his family had a great history of doing things for the community. They did a lot of fundraising and a lot of putting things together, like big pieces of land for parks and things. And he said, well, you know, why don't you just try to raise money for charity and do the matchmaking at the same time. So as a result, I've fixed up all of my girlfriends. I've made over 215 marriages. And I've also raised millions of dollars for charity at the same time. So I say that probably the best secret that I can give you is to become a matchmaker for your friends.
Now you know some of the secrets. And the biggest one is making a match for yourself and your friends. So, girls, if you'd like to know more and get more tips and the real deep scoop on how to marry a fabulous man, run down to your closest bookstore or get online right now and order How to Marry a Fabulous Man by Perry Livermore. Oh, and by the way, while you're online, go to her website at perrylivermore.net. PerryLivermore.net.
If you come home every night to an empty apartment, become proactive. Read my book. Join a matchmaking service, jump on a dating website, or become your own matchmaker. One thing's for sure, there is a fabulous man just waiting for you, standing proud with love in his eyes at the end of that aisle.
Da 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 da